Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 366 for April 21st, 2012. Coming up in a few minutes.
It's just a different level. At Makers, you're trying to make one thing and make it really, really well. And you know, that was had its own fun and challenges in it. But now I've got, you know, 20, 30 different distillers, and every one of them's trying to do something a little different and be creative in their own right.
Dave Pickerel is becoming known as the Johnny Appleseed of the micro-distilling movement. Since leaving Maker's Mark as master distiller 4 years ago, he's been working as a consultant to craft distillers all over North America, in addition to serving as master distiller at George Washington's distillery at Mount Vernon. Now, Dave is also taking on the role of master distiller at Hill Rock Estate Distillery in upstate New York. More with Dave later on, along with the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department.
Whiskey Cast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
First off, let's look at the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Last time around, I reported on Slane Castle owner Lord Henry Mountcharles and his frustration with Beam over not being allowed to buy any more whiskey from Ireland's Cooley distillery following Beam's acquisition of Cooley earlier this year. Now the Irish Times reports Lord Henry is considering building his own distillery at Slane Castle in County Meath. The castle's already a popular tourist destination because of the major concerts held there, and if it's built, the new distillery would include a visitor's center. Beam decided to cut off Cooley's sales to Slane Castle and other independent bottlers without long-term supply contracts after a review showed possible supply shortages over the next several years for Cooley's own brands. In other news, Bowmore is planning to rename its 10-year-old Tempest Limited Edition single malt just for the U.S. market. Bowmore can't use the name Tempest in the U.S., so it's asking Facebook users to pick between two choices, Whirlpool or Doris Moore, which is Gaelic for unpredictable and rough water. The online vote will run through May 18th. One of the voters for the winning name will be drawn at random to win a tailored Bowmore tweed jacket. And just in case I didn't make it clear enough, Bowmore plans to keep calling it Tempest in the rest of the world, at least for now. Meanwhile, Anock has teamed up with Scottish artist Peter Arkell on a series of new limited edition bottlings. The first Peter Arkell limited edition release has his depictions of the ingredients that go into a whiskey on the label, with malted barley, spring water, heat, yeast, thyme, and of course, magic. The whiskey is matured in Spanish oak sherry casks. That's a first for Anock. The edition will be available in the UK exclusively through Royal Mile Whiskies, and it'll be available also in the US, Sweden, and other European markets. There's a second global edition coming later this year, along with one destined exclusively for Sweden. Meanwhile, Speyburn is one of Anock's sister brands under the Inverhouse umbrella, and it's also getting new packaging for both the 10-year-old and Braden Orach expressions. There's also a new Clan Speyburn affinity group that will make special exclusive bottlings available to members. Erin Distillery has released the fourth and final expression in its Icons of Erin series. The Golden Eagle combines bourbon and sherry casks filled in 1999, and it's named after the nesting pair of golden eagles that live near the distillery. Erin has also set the date for its annual open day at the distillery in La Crianza. It'll be on June 30th. And finally, Springbank is switching importers in the U.S. Starting June 1st, Pacific Edge Wine and Spirits will handle Springbank's whiskeys exclusively in the U.S., replacing Price Imports after many years. The deal includes Springbank, Long Row, Hazelburn, and Kilcarran whiskeys, And word is that there'll be some special spring bank releases with labels marking the change available in the U.S. this summer. The U.S. market will also get the first look at a revised long row range later this year. And that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Visit us on the web at glenmorangie.com or download our iPad app at the iTunes App Store. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well made.
Let's check the comments of the week now, brought to you this time around by Highland Park. Last time around, I mentioned Simon Seaton's search for a bottle of Glenbretton single malt from Canada. Simon is trying to taste all of the whiskies in Ian Buxton's book, 101 Whiskies to Try Before You Die, and that was the one he had problems finding. Heard from Simon this week, the distillery was able to put him in touch with a distributor in Texas. Problem solved. Dan Signo, meanwhile, emailed a question about Pappy Van Winkle bourbons this week. He read an article on Connoisseur.com in which the writer, DBK, had this to say. Because all of the whiskey in the Pappy Van Winkle line is sourced from the Stitzel-Weller Distillery, we are nearing the end of the supply. Many will be sad to see this venerable juice go, myself included. It is as if we are tasting history. Dan's email consisted of this. Is Pappy going away? Did I read this right? Might have to hang on to the bottle and a half that I have. Well, I went straight to the best source for the answer, Julian Van Winkle, the grandson of Pappy Van Winkle and the president of Old Rip Van Winkle, and here's what he told me in an email. Obviously, the Stitzel-Weller distillation will be gone in the 20- and 23-year Pappy bottling in the next few years, since they quit distillation in 1992. We are following up the Stitzel-Weller distillation with some Bernheim whiskey and then Buffalo Trace distillation after that. So the 15, 20, and 23-year will continue with the same Van Winkle recipe as always. Best, Julian. Thank you for answering that, Julian, and thanks for the question, Dan. Earlier this month, Judd Lafter asked for help finding good whiskey bars and shops to check out in Vancouver while he was there for a conference. Judd posted this on our Facebook page this week. Just got back from a conference in Vancouver and wanted to thank Dave Mason of the West Coast Whiskey Society for recommendations of bars and shops. I had a great lunch at Irish Heather and made it home with two bottles of the Confederation Oak. That one's from 40 Creek, by the way. And that's great to hear, Judd. Thank you for following up with us. We also were able to help William Rivers with his request for good whiskey in Indianapolis while he's visiting for a couple of weeks. Christopher Winters chipped in with some suggestions, and William likes the idea of shrimp at St. Elmo's Steakhouse downtown with Samard Beg. If you have questions, suggestions, or something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on our Facebook page or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park.
Hello, this is Jerry Tosh of Highland Park, the makers of the best spirit in the world. If you'd like to go onto the WhiskeyCast website and click on the banner, then it'll take you to the inner circle and sign up, and we'll send you as much information about Highland Park as you'd ever need to know.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Tim Brennan, retired engineering supervisor, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've worked with Irish distillers for 40 years. I was born in Middleton and went to school in Middleton and then joined a company in 1971. Traditions in the old distillery were if you were involved in a very dirty job, you then got a half glass of Redbreast. They were the perks in the old distillery. We had one guy there who was particularly fond of his glass of Redbreast, and in order to go to the manager of the warehouse, he would get a really dirty bag of dust and he'd shake it over himself so that he looked so dirty, and he would head off over to the manager and say, "Mr. Daly, here I am, I've had a terrible dirty job for the morning, look at the cut of me, any chance of getting a half one?" And he'd duly get his half one, come back, change his clothes, and he was fine again.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, no Redbreast.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival's annual preview event is April 28th in Bardstown, Kentucky, along with the Limburg Whiskey Fair this coming weekend in Limburg, Germany. The Good Spirits Company in Glasgow will host a Brooklady tasting on May 3rd, while the Kilderkin in Edinburgh will be the site for a Jolly Topper whiskey tasting. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter has single malt extravaganzas in Denver on May 2nd, Phoenix on May 4th, and New York City on the 10th. You might still be able to snag a spot at the Glenlivet's Guardians Whiskey School May 7th through the 9th in Scotland. The Spirit of Toronto Festival is May 12th. Whiskey Live Singapore is May 21st, followed by Whiskey Live Dublin May 26th. Springbank Distillery's annual open day is May 24th, and the Isla Festival of Malt and Music, the Fage, is May 25th through June 3rd. Those are just a few of the events coming up over the next month or so. You'll find a full list at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. In 1886, William Grant set out to fulfill a lifelong ambition, to make the best dram in the valley. Today, a rarity in Scotland, Glenfiddich still remains independently owned by the fifth generation of the same pioneering family. This unique legacy of skill, passion and pride forges a long-term commitment to creating truly great single malt, without compromise. Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To learn more about our award-winning range and join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
This week on WhiskeyCast In Depth, my conversation with master distiller Dave Pickerel. Dave left Maker's Mark 4 years ago. Since then, he's been working with a lot of craft distillers, as well as serving as the master distiller at George Washington's distillery at Mount Vernon. During the American Distilling Institute's conference in Louisville earlier this month, Dave and I were in a van headed for Bardstown. At the time, he had agreed to take on the post of master distiller at Hill Rock Estate Distillery in upstate New York, but the deal hadn't officially been announced yet. Dave didn't mention it during our conversation, which, once again, took place earlier in April.
Is this more fun, working with all these little guys and the fun stories, than working on big distilleries like when you were at Maker's?
Oh, it's absolutely no question it's more fun. There's the eye is on experimentation and playing around and trying to make new and different things. It's just a different level. At Maker's, you're trying to make one thing and make it really, really well. That was had its own fun and challenges in it, but now I've got 20-30 different distillers, and every one of them's trying to do something a little different and to be creative in their own right, for me that's just a lot more fun. It's play.
What's some of the more creative projects you've been working on with these guys? Because you've been working on everything from little 25 gallon so-called hillbilly stills all the way up to guys who want to compete with the big boys someday, right?
Oh yeah. One of my fun ones right now is we're getting close to releasing product is Hill Rock Estate Distillery, upstate New York, I'm going to try to coin a new phrase, ground to glass distillery. And what I mean by that is, they bring the seed in. We start out and plant all the rye, all the barley, and grow it all right on their own farm. Harvest it, bring it in, and then we've got our own floor malting facility, and then from there right into the distillery, mashing, fermenting, distilling, and then maturing on site. Then we'll bottle it on site, so from the time the seed comes in until the time the bottle leaves, never leaves the site.
And this is probably one of the only floor maltings in the U.S. right?
To my knowledge, yes it is. We're pretty proud of that, and we're really excited about it. We've already made some good batches. I was astounded. The first batch of malt whiskey that came off of there, the nose was just in your face clove and cinnamon. It was so incredible. It's honest truth. I actually stopped all the work that was going on, including the contractors that were putting pipes in and stuff, made everybody come over and smell it, because it was just the most phenomenal right off the still malt whiskey smell I'd ever had.
When you're working with these small stills, what's different about working with a smaller still than the big ones?
Well, every still, truly, as my belief is that every still has a personality. I mean, I go as far as try to get people to actually name their stills, to help inculcate the thinking that there's a personality associated with it. And so every one of them, you gotta just learn. So startup isn't a rote process of making the still do what you want it to do, and click, 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 they all do the same thing. Each one has its you've just got to learn. Okay, you know, for this one, when you turn it on, you leave the trays dry at first, you take the heads cut, then you bang the deflagmator wide open and close all the trays. And, you know, for that one over there, that's not enough. You got to put some pumped reflux to get the trays flooded. And so each still is its own learning opportunity.
What are some of the best names you've heard for these stills?
People just name them after girls, you know, girlfriends and you know, public figures. You know, I won't go into all the gory details because some of them are kind of private. But even at Mount Vernon, all five stills have names.
And I want to talk to you about that next because you were part of that project earlier this last week with the guys from Scotland. And I know you told me earlier that was a really unique experience for you to work with the Scottish distillers there for the first time.
It was a marvelous experience, and you know, beyond belief. You know, my three favorite Scotches of all time are Laphroaig, Cardew, and Glenmorangie, and the three masters distiller, John Campbell, Dr. Bill Lumsden, and Andy Kant, were all involved in this project. So it was like, you know, a childhood dream to be associated with those three gentlemen at the same time.
And this was the first time single malt spirit had been distilled at Mount Vernon. What was it like, and was it different than the spirits you guys had put in there before?
Well, clearly it was, it's malt whiskey, and the guys from Scotland basically sent me a set of points to hit. They didn't come for the mashing and fermenting; they just came for the distillation. And so basically, you know, they give us, okay, here's our strike temperature, here's our wash temperature, here's various parameters and then it was my job to figure out how to translate that into 18th century means and methods. Toughest part of it was, you know, they don't ferment on the grain, and everything we've done to this point was ferment and distill on the grain. So we actually made a screen box and hand sieved all of the grain out of the mash twice, because it's a two wash process, and it's a couple hours a batch just to screen all of the grain out. But what we wound up with was an incredible replication. The Scotch guys all said that they were amazed, and in fact, the first distillate to come off was so good that we made a director's cut, and I know it's really unusual to actually pull off finished distillate from a first still run, but we actually made a director's cut at 102 and change proof, put it away in a 12-gallon barrel before we did the second run of distillation. Just an incredible time.
Tell me how life has been for you in the 4 years or so since you left Makers, because you've really been focusing a lot on going back to the roots of distilling with all these micro guys, the work at Mount Vernon. Is this the most rewarding 4 years for you, you think, in your career, or how would you describe it?
Rewarding is a good word. It's certainly a joyride. To be involved with so many marvelous spirits and so many wonderful projects is just a dream come true for me. I feel truly honored to be invited to work at Mount Vernon. And, you know, the thing that dawned on me that's kind of scary is I've been at Mount Vernon for 13 years. And I was only at Makers for 14 and a half, so two more years and Mount Vernon wins, I think. But, Makers was a marvelous time. I really enjoyed my time at Makers. I still love Makers, Mark. There are still people that come up to me and ask me to sign bottles. And, you know, and for the next 2 years, the juice in the bottle is still mine. But, um, But I clearly have to say that I'm having a lot more fun now.
Now, you mentioned Hill Rock in upstate New York. What other projects that you've been working on are going to come to market within the next year that people should be watching out for?
Well, one that's already out, up in the Seattle area, Woodinville Whiskey Company, they're into aged product now. They had their first two releases of a mature bourbon and a mature American whiskey, and I think on April 14th we're releasing their first batch of rye whiskey that's been barrel aged. They're awesome. I mean, you know, their first day of release of aged spirit, people stood in line starting at 2:45 in the morning, and the line didn't stop until we closed the door at something like 6:30 in the evening. These guys they're just all over it. You know, for a totally different category, Old Smoky Distillery is doing marvelous. You know, with their various moonshine variants, their apple pie moonshine and their moonshine cherries and all, they're just doing phenomenal. And you know, one that you definitely have to be on the lookout for is Kings County. You know, these guys started out with like five 8-gallon pod stills. Then you can kind of pick them up and carry them around when you need to. And you know, we're starting a scale up project with them right now. But they're already winning awards for their product. And so, you know, when you get the you know, when we can scale it up, you know, there's just sky's the limit. I mean, I think right now they're selling in 200 ml and 375 ml bottles because that's all the whiskey they can make. And so I'm really, really excited about them. And they're, you know, right in Brooklyn, New York, so they've got a great market there.
What do you tell these guys when they come to you and say, I want to build a distillery, I want to make whiskey, can you help me? What do you tell them about what it's going to be like for them when they get started, if they actually want to do this for real?
Well, the first thing is, you know, when I meet somebody that starts talking about I want to distill, can you help? I want to know three things. First of all, I want to know personally for me, are they nice people? Can they be friends? Because that's what I want to work for. I want to work for friends. The second thing is, I want to know, do they have a good business plan? And what I mean by that is, you know, are they, you know, coming to me, you know, flexible with, you know, reasonable numbers, a few thousand cases here and there, or do they want to make, you know, the world's next greatest vodka and start with 300,000 cases? You know, I want to know if their business plan is a tenable business plan. And the third is, I want to know if they're learners, if they're inquisitive, if they want to learn. You know, if they've got an eye towards improvement. Those are the things that I look for if I'm going to choose to work with somebody. And then the things that I start telling them is, you know, be ready for a ride. The first goal is own your backyard. And, you know, everybody that works with me, I will hammer that home, own your backyard first. And that means everything from tailoring your initial product releases to things that people in your neighborhood and, you figure out, you got to decide what your backyard is. And then tailor your products a little bit so that they've got a local flair, so that they're really attractive locally. And once you own your backyard, once your distribution is saturated in your backyard, then move out into the neighborhood. And it seems to be a real successful model for folks.
You forgot the key element and the key ingredient in here, and it's not the barley, it's the money, right?
That's always the deal, you know. And you know what? Another one of the things that I always talk to people about is, what's your cash flow project? I mean, you know, there are a few people that come in well funded enough that they can just be patient and wait till the product's mature and put it out. That's pretty rare. Everybody really needs to pay the piper to keep the thing going. And so we talk about cash flow projects and, you know, things you can get out the door quickly. And you know, and those fall in a number of categories. I mean, some people, their cash flow project is they take a few bucks and they go out and we find some mature whiskey someplace and they put together a little brand and just sell some mature whiskey while they're waiting for their own stuff. You know, I call it found whiskey. I just sell some of that just to make a little cash while they're waiting for their stuff to mature. Some folks do vodka. You know, I'm not much of a fan of vodka. You know, I tell people I quit drinking vodka years and years ago because I like taste. But we will help people make vodka. But you know, part of that, you know, is your business plan reasonable? Is remembering that the vodka market's already saturated and most people can't sell vodka to their own mother off their back porch. So the market for vodka as a cash flow is pretty limited, but in some places it might be enough to you know, to keep the creditors off your doorstep. Certainly white whiskey is a growing category that needs to be dealt with. You know, I wish the government would deal with it, you know, face up. You know, the fact is that the government has no category for white whiskey, and so you know, which is really unfair. When you look, you know, tequila, you can have, you know, silver, you can have reposado, and then you can have añejo. For brandy, you can have eau de vie, you can have immature brandy, and you can have brandy. For so many other spirits, there is an unaged variant, and it just seems to me that the American populace is being deprived of a category, and the result is that it's the Wild West right now for the poor guys trying to sell white whiskey. You know, they face an inquisition. Well, explain to us how your product can be white if it's whiskey, because it has to touch a barrel first, and so you wind up declaring that it's not whiskey; it's a distilled spirit specialty. Even if you look, Maker's Mark is they've released a white whiskey and it just says Maker's Mark White. It doesn't say whiskey on the label because TTB won't let you do it. I think it's time for that rule to be fixed, so that we can get honest with the public and say, okay, we've got a whiskey product and it doesn't have any age and it's clear, that seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Along with changing it to allow for an actual single malt category too, which we also don't have, right?
Well, we have malt whiskey. You know, you can call it. There is a malt whiskey category, but if you're in America, your malt whiskey has to go in a new barrel. And you know, the best traditions in the world for malt whiskey is that malt whiskey goes in a used barrel. So it would be nice to have the categories updated a little bit.
Now, you mentioned the found whiskeys. That's sort of what you did a few years ago with Whistle Pig, right?
It is. Yeah, Whistle Pig is a great example of what you can do with a found whiskey. You know, you go out and you hunt around, and I mean, literally, I spent a year looking and you know, postulating on what the best rye whiskey ought to be. And then once we found it, we got a willing partner and put some money down and you know, got some barrels listed in our name, and away we go. And you know, Whistle Pig has been a big winner. You know, the wine enthusiast gave us a 96, said it was the best rye whiskey ever made. So it is possible to find a whiskey. It's out there. There's really marvelous products that are available for sale if you're willing to dig. I mean, you know, they're like little gold nuggets. You have to mine to get them. You should see my tasting notes on Whistle Pig. I mean, literally, I think I used every idiosyncrasy credit in my bank account to get in and taste every rye whiskey that there is before I finally settled on what we wound up with for Whistle Pig.
What's going on with that these days?
Well, we're expanding right now. You know, we're you know, in case volume. You know, we're getting more and more listings. We're not trying to grow too many new states right now, just because volume is limited. And what I don't want to do is get into an allocation mode. You know, everybody knows rye whiskey's in short supply. It's probably going to continue in short supply for another couple of years. And on top of being in short supply, the growth rate's phenomenal. Last year alone, rye whiskey category in the U.S. grew 50%, and that's on almost no new volume, which means that there are outages all over the place. So I've got a fixed amount of Whistle Pig available in periods. You know, it's an enduring supply. I've got enough to, you know, we've got years and years and years worth out there, but I've only got so much in each calendar period. And so we want to make sure that that, you know, it's a growing amount, and we will make sure that our existing customers remain satisfied before we go get new ones.
You're still planning on building the distillery in Vermont?
We have been talking about that at great length here just recently. And there's some big plans for that place.
And we'll leave it at that. What do you think your legacy is going to be 20, 30 years from now? Is it going to be working with the little guys, or are you always going to be known as Maker's Mark Master Distiller Dave Pickerel?
Oh, you know, gosh, I don't think about legacy myself because, you know, somebody, you know, I've got a great poem from when I was a kid that somebody gave me, and it's called The Indispensable Man. And the gist of it is, you know, if you want to know how much you're going to be missed when you're gone, you go get a bucket of water and stick your hand in it. You swish around all you want. When you pull your hand out, the hole that's left is a measure of how much you'll be missed. So I don't contemplate legacy an awful lot. People continue to refer to me as the former Master Distiller Maker's Mark, and that's really cool because it's such a marvelous brand. Somebody once gave me this marvelous credit. They called me the Johnny Appleseed of craft distilling, which I think is a bit over the top, but I'll take it because I think it's really cool. And I do have little distilleries all over the U.S. right now, and I don't know if there was a legacy. You know, I'd love to see one of two things. I'd love to either wind up on the Kentucky Bourbon Festival Hall of Fame or the American Whiskey Hall of Fame that they do at Mount Vernon every year. It would be an honor beyond anything I deserve, but it would be really cool.
By the way, Dave will not be moving to New York for his new job at Hill Rock Estate. He'll be staying in Kentucky and supervising operations manager Tim Welly, who will handle the day-to-day work at the distillery. When Hill Rock releases its first whiskey, I hope to have tasting notes for it here on WhiskeyCast. In the meantime, let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with one of the distilleries Dave mentioned. This week's tasting notes are brought to you by the Glenrothes, and we'll start off with the Kings County Distillery Bourbon. This is one we also heard about on the last episode from Nicole Austin of Kings County Distillery during our Whiskey Live New York coverage. It's bottled at 45% ABV. The nose is rich with notes of caramel, vanilla, honey, and nutmeg, along with hints of vanilla and oak. The taste is young, thick, and fiery with a strong cinnamon note that fades slowly to reveal hints of vanilla, honey, molasses, and caramel, and the finish is long and sweet. It's excellent for such a young whiskey. I can't wait to taste more aged versions. I'm scoring the Kings County Distillery Bourbon an 86. Let's move on to another young whiskey that celebrates a vintage anniversary. The English Whiskey Company's Diamond Jubilee Commemorative Single Malt honors Queen Elizabeth's 60th anniversary on the throne. It's bottled at 46% ABV, and there's no age statement, but all of the distillery's whiskies are relatively young so far. The nose has notes of red apples, vanilla, and a slight maltiness, with hints of apricot, almonds, and anise. The taste has great notes of pepper and cloves, honey, and a good fruitiness with touches of apricots and pears. The finish is long and sweet with honey and butterscotch notes, along with just a touch of clove, adding a nice balance. I'm scoring the Diamond Jubilee Commemorative from the English Whiskey Company an 88. And finally, let's look at the Major's Reserve from Glen Grant. It's the entry-level single malt from Glen Grant Distillery and carries no age statement. It's bottled at 40% ABV. The nose is light and dry with subtle notes of malt, nuts, licorice, and toffee. The taste is smooth and spicy with mild cinnamon, licorice, and a slight honey and toffee sweetness. The finish is dry and slightly sweet with a subtle cinnamon touch, too. I'm scoring the Glen Grant Major's Reserve an 84. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you by the Glenrothes, where maturity matters, not age. You'll find my tasting notes in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android users, as well as the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the photo gallery and print shop, the WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings Monthly podcast, and our WhiskeyCast HD video episodes, and a complete archive of past shows. The address is whiskeycast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com.
Whiskeycast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskeycast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Whiskeycast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2012, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.